Hello, and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this is podcast number 223. Don't have to say you're sorry. And so with the return of the new season, I thought it was about time that the longest running Celtic fan podcast have a return to talking about Celtic Football Club in today's season. So since the last time we did that, we've had the departure of Neil Lennon, the arrival of Ronnie Dyla, some pre-season friendlies, the Reykjavik game, Legia Warsaw disaster, the St Johnson game, and a couple of signings coming in on loan. There's plenty to talk about. So this week I'm joined by Lawrence Donegan to discuss all of that. For those of you with a musical ear, you may note in the background is a song written by Lawrence many moons ago, because it was written by I was 19. I still have hopes that one day I'll learn to play that guitar that's sitting in the next door room. Never mind getting to write an original song. So, enough of me. This is The Bluebells with East Green, followed by me, Harry Brady, with him, Lawrence Donegan. So I am joined on our first podcast to talk about football and Celtic specifically since Ronnie Dyla's appointment. So I'm joined by Lawrence Donegan. Lawrence, how you doing?
How are you doing there, Harry?
I'm perfect, thanks. Well done. Correct name. So we've got a lot of things to talk about. We've not done a podcast since Neil Lennon's departure. So before we'll try and do things in a chronological order. So first up, the changeover from Lennon to Dyla. So first up, were you surprised that Lennon left?
Not in the slightest. I mean, it was the worst kept secret in Glasgow, wasn't it? So I understand that, you know, relations between Lennon and the board, specifically Peter Lawwell, according to the gossip, who knows, weren't great and hadn't been great for a long time. What was surprising to me was the way that it was handled. You know, you think if the gossip was true, then, you know, there would have been a smooth transition. You know, somebody would have been lined up, and you know, maybe even Neil Lennon would have had something lined up as well. But it all seemed very sudden and dramatic. I mean, so again, as I understand it, just reading what was in the papers and on the web and whatever, that, you know, Neil Lennon went over to Dublin to see Dermot Desmond, and the next thing we know, he's decided to leave. So it was all a bit strange. And then, of course, he leaves, and then we have turns out we don't have anybody lined up. The transition is not smooth. I mean, I guess that's just the way it goes in football, doesn't it? You know, the first thing, I mean, I heard, you know, from a pretty good source on the day that Neil left, that Henrik Larsson was getting, you know, had been offered the job and was definitely going to take it. And which filled me with fear and hope. Hope that he would do great, and fear that he would, you know, tarnish, you know, his legacy. But anyway, so to stop rambling, it just struck me the transition was a bit odd. You know, I was just surprised that, you know, that something wasn't lined up. I was glad that Roy Keane didn't take the job. I don't see what his, you know, what his qualifications were, and you know, I know he'd had a decent spell at Sunderland, you know, for the first month or so. But again, I knew I have a slight connection with Sunderland. I lived down there for a while. I'm a bit of a Sunderland fan, and you know, I knew people who'd covered Sunderland, and he wasn't, you know, if he couldn't get on and get along with people and, you know, the media and all that in Sunderland, goodness knows what would have happened if he'd been, you know, subjected to what was going on in, you know, the media in Scotland for a while. It would have been, you know, it would have been slightly troublesome, I think. Again, like most other people, I'm not a big football hipster. You know, I'd never heard of Ronnie, I have to say. it was even Strom Godset. You know, it was only afterwards that I realised that that's where Stefan Johansson had come from. Yeah. I didn't know that, you know. But, you know, who knows? You know, it seemed like, it's fit in with this whole idea. You know, if you look at the way that we do, you know, we handle players now, you know, we try and find unearth nuggets and and develop them into great players, and, you know, and hopefully they'll be, you know, they'll really work out for us. I mean, it seemed like a logical to extend that process to into the managerial world. You know, this is a guy that not many people had heard of, that appears to have done a good job. And he, I must say, his initial press conference was very impressive. You know, especially it was in his second language.
Yeah.
I thought he did really well, came across really well, said all the right things. So people are going crazy. You know, people are going crazy after the Champions League games. But I was looking yesterday. Somebody tweeted out Neil Lennon's, you know, first team. You know, the first team he picked as a Celtic manager. I mean, there's some names on there that it's only 3 or 4 years ago, and I couldn't remember. I couldn't pick them out of a police lineup.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy that he's there. I'm happy to give him a go. I don't think, again, he seems, well, we can get on to the actual football that's being played later on, but he seems to say all the right things. He seems to have the right idea. He seems to be a bit tougher than, a bit tougher than people maybe give him credit for. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, he's not the players that he would have. You know, I mean, he obviously wants to have a bit of a clear out by the looks of things. So we'll see how it goes.
But getting back to your point at the beginning about it not being a well-kept secret about Lennon, you'll have heard the same thing as me, which was the previous summer, there was expectation in the club and from people who seem to know, who we believe know Lennon. The indication was he seriously thought about, and the club were expecting him not to return to the club the previous summer.
Yeah.
So you'd have thought, getting back to your point, he must have been thinking, if he was thinking about it the previous summer, he must have been thinking about it on and off all through last season.
Yeah, well, he subsequently said that. You know, he was getting angry with the players and he didn't switch off for the last 6 months. One of the big mysteries in all of this to me is, what is Neil Lennon doing out of a job? I mean, that's an amazing... I know Ronnie's only been there five or six weeks or whatever, but already, look at the evidence of the four Champions League games.
Yeah.
Lennon has did a fantastic job at Celtic. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, it's amazing. And you look at who's getting jobs in England, there's a million jobs coming up in the Premier League. And, well, it looks as if Tony Pulis is going to go from Crystal Palace.
I think he's gone.
Has he gone? Well, if he's gone, you know, I guarantee you he will not get that job. I mean, maybe Neil Lennon doesn't want that job, but he wouldn't even be mentioned, I wouldn't imagine.
Well, one of the things I did wonder was, I get the impression you have to have an agent who's virtually kicking people's doors down to put your name forward every time a job's out there. And to be fair to Lennon, he maybe felt he couldn't have his agent be doing that when he was still Celtic manager, because it would be disrespectful to Celtic if it got out, and it'd be dreadful just...
No, I'm you're being a bit naive there, Harry, I have to tell you. I have a slight experience of the world of football agents, and you know, there's all sorts of things done while people are still in jobs. You know, I mean, it just seems remarkable to me. And especially, I mean, I don't know how much you heard or saw of Lennon during the World Cup.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought he was terrific on the telly and especially on the radio. You know, articulate, and he came across as a guy who. I remember listening to him on, he was doing, I think it was Argentina, Iran maybe, with Alistair Bruce Ball. And it was as if he'd swallowed an encyclopedia on Argentinian football. And I said to somebody at the BBC afterwards, I said, geez, Lennon was really good on the radio there. And I said, he must have had a big crib sheet in front of him. No, he just it was all off, you know, he just knew it, you know, he'd obviously, but it wasn't as if he'd been cramming for his homework or anything. Anyway, my point is, it just seems, I don't know, maybe there's some sort of word out of Neil Lennon in England, you know, that he's this, that, or the next thing. I have no idea, but to me, it seems just remarkable he hasn't landed in a job yet.
I think it probably, and gets back to a point we make cover in relation to signings, it probably illustrates how low they think of the Scottish Premier League. That they wouldn't consider Lennon as manager.
Well, I mean, they're certainly considering. I mean, look at the number of players that are going south now. I mean, there's a lot of. You know, look at that left. There's a Robertson from Dundee United. Yeah. $500,000. Oof. I mean, that's, you know, and it looks again. You know, it looks as if there's going to be players shipped out of Celtic Park over the next. I mean, I don't think there'll be any shortage of takers. You know, I've heard all kinds of names. You know, Mulgrew and Effie and Matthews. I mean, it's, and these guys, a lot, they'll get money for all these guys if they go. I mean, it's, although maybe the story was that Matthews and Mulgrew were heading to Crystal Palace, they might be staying for a while longer.
Yes, they might well be. But so if we try and take things in chronological order, so Ronnie has come in, and as you say, he seems to be saying the right things and talking about the right style of football that I would want.
Yeah,
from a Celtic manager, a bit more high paced. To match with modern football. So we then had the pre-season friendlies, which for a change, we won games left, right, and centre in pre-season.
Comparing to last year.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see a lot of the pre-season games last year, but I watched them all last year. It seemed like, and we absolutely gave the mighty Reykjavik, we gave them a good kicking.
Yeah.
Actually, I went to Murrayfield for the second leg. That was a fine performance. Timo Pukki looked like, I don't know,
like a footballer's definitely in there somewhere trying to get out.
Huntelaar or something. Yeah, he did. Well, I think like it's all subsequently been revealed that Reykjavik weren't perhaps Barcelona.
Yes.
I mean, looked pretty good. Good off to a good start, and then the real business got underway, and it all went a bit pear shaped. But even in saying that, you know, for the first game in Poland, I was watching on my Celtic TV, and geez, we played great. I mean, for 25 minutes, we played them off. We were ahead. We were playing some great football, really good stuff. We could have scored two or three. I think Commons missed one. It was good stuff. And then they scored, and lo and behold, the world collapsed.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and that's one of those games. And of course, Effie gets sent off. Jeez, oh. And then you're chasing the game after that, aren't you, with 10 men? But it just seemed, you know, it seemed that he imposed himself on the team for the first, this was Ronnie Dyla's kind of football, and it looked great. But then things went wrong in the field, and discipline, shape, tactics completely collapsed. You know, guys didn't know what they were. It was, you know, I eventually turned it off. I'm in the habit of turning things off when they're not doing well. I can't face up to failure.
Well, my reading of it was they're trying to, players who are maybe not that comfortable with the new system are trying to play the new system, and when it's all working well, they can play it, and then when it all starts to go to pot, they don't actually know what to do, and they panic.
But again, there's nothing especially wrong with that, is there? I mean, if you know, it's going to take basically the way I see it, it looks like a year zero things going on at Celtic. Mm-hmm. You know, they're completely wiping everything clean. Right, we're going to change the players. We're going to change the way we play. It's going to be a completely new quotes unquote product. And I mean, that doesn't. You can't do that in a month. It just can't. And the players will learn, you know. You can, as I say, you could see touches of that in that first leg game in Poland. It looked quite good. And you could see touches of it in the St. Johnson game last night, although we'll get on to that later. The first half was pretty desperate. I mean, But it looks kind of good. I kind of like it. But we have to give it time. But it is amazing. Will he be given time? I mean, you need to pay for it probably more than I do. I mean, geez, oh.
I think he will be given time because I think our board's got more balls than David Murray had when he put in Le Guin to try and change something about his club.
Well, there's no Barry Ferguson figure kicking around, is there? That's why I think Scott Brown's very important. I think when he came in, it was very noticeable to me that he was really. And you have to say, from what you know of Ronnie Dyla, you know, Scott Brown doesn't seem like his kind of player. But as soon as you get in the door, he was very quick to sort of, you know, Brown's this, he's that, he's the next thing, he's a true professional, which in fact he is probably.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. You know, so there is no Barry, you know, there is no powerful Barry Ferguson figure in there undermining the manager, which, you know, is probably an excellent thing.
Yeah, but your point about the style of play, you can't bring in a new manager and just replicate what the old manager did. So that's got to change. But if we've also specifically gone for, as you pointed out, a young manager who might have different ideas and more modern, not saying that Lennon's an old dinosaur or whatever, but different ideas of how to play, that's not the way these guys have been playing for the last 4 years. As you say, you can't change that overnight.
No. And the other thing is as well, when you have a, I hate to keep on talking about it in terms of, you have a, again, product, right? And it's, I think we all agreed, right? Even Neil Lennon agreed after he's left in his subsequent interviews that it was all getting a bit stale, you know? And you can see that at match days. You know, the atmosphere's flat. You know, people are still going, but they're kind of dragging themselves to go. That, oh, you know, if there's an alternative on, they might not go. So if you've got, you know, if something's getting stale, then you change it up. You know, you change it up. You completely change it up and try and revive it and renew it. And then, you know, as you say, as long as the board have got the balls to stick with it, to ignore the press. I mean, I was listening. I don't know why I do it, but I was listening last night when I was, I don't know what I was doing. I was out running and I had the Radio Clyde on my headphones, the phone in, you know, and, you know, some guy, I think Mark Guidi or something, is going on, you know, this game, these games are vital, you know, crucial game. You know, hang on a second. You know, it's only five games in and he's talking about crucial and vital games and the kind of the shark theme music undertone is,
yeah.
Is he doesn't he win this, then he's out. You know, what, I mean, how ludicrous is that? So, as I say, as you say, if the board have got the ball to stand by them, then, I mean, it should be quite a, I mean, I don't doubt that there'll be a few ups and downs, but it should be quite a thrilling kind of ride. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, to touch on the St Johnstone game, one of the things I thought was most noticeable for me, granted, St Johnstone had 10 men at this point, but the last 20 minutes, when it was pretty much his front four that were playing.
Yeah.
We played. It was Berge, Boricta.
Do you know what? I thought Boricta looked right up for it, actually.
Yeah.
You know, almost. Do you remember when, I'm going back, I'm showing my age now, going back to, I can't remember which League Cup final was, and Andy Gray came on for Rangers.
Yes.
You know, and his wee legs were gone. I thought, a touch of that a bit, but Richter, he was so keen last night, you know, he's, you know, because it all went, it's all about the penalty now, but, you know, I thought, oh my goodness, that might be a new player we've got there. I mean, because he's not a bad player. I mean, he was a good player at Ajax. You know, he cost us, or Ajax, he cost us a couple of million. You know, he could actually, maybe this will be something that will turn his career around. I mean, who knows?
But all I was going to say was when he didn't have, and I'm not, I like Commons, so I'm not particularly picking on, but when he didn't have Commons and Stokes in the field,
yeah,
the attacking four were pressing high up the park as a unit, and pretty much the last 20 minutes, as I say, they were only 10 men. But St Johnstone never got more than 30 yards from their goal, from their box.
Yeah, who the front four? I'm trying to remember.
It was Berge, Boricta.
Yeah,
and I'm now for the life of me, I'm stuck on who the other two were, and everybody listening to this is probably shouting at the radio. It was shouting at the podcast. It was X and Y.
Forrest had gone off by then.
Forrest had gone off, Commons had gone off, and Stokes had gone off.
Right, who was it? Oh, Kyle came on for. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, we looked magnificent. We looked like Real Madrid against the 10 man St Johnstone. That's what we're getting. That's the point.
Yes, exactly. McGregor was one of the.
McGregor?
Yes.
Yeah. And I can't make my mind up about McGregor. The one thing I do know. You noticed he's like Forrest. Is it something they teach in the academy that you run with flipper hands?
That's
you
know, I said.
Your arms go down your side, hands like flippers.
He's got exactly the same running gait as Forrest. It must be something that there's a bit of coaching about it.
Aye, that's a Jim McGuinness idea. Donegal Gaelic football team. No. Anyway, he looks. I can't. You know, I can't. they're obviously, that's a quite a good thing. They're obviously going to give this kid a run out. I mean, a serious, I know Neil Lennon would give a guys a run out here and there, but you know, but they never got an, you know, apart from James Forrest, nobody ever got the full anointment. You know, but I mean, he looks as if he's going to get an extended run in the team, a real chance to prove himself, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, which is the other thing you're talking about, a year zero, and the impression I've got, one of the reasons for appointing Dialla, and one of the sort of undertone or between the lines of comments that were made when he was appointed, I get the impression he's been told you've got to get far more of our youth through into playing first team football.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, no sign of that. I mean, the flash to Henderson was sitting in the stands with Scott Brown, like, you know. But again, I haven't seen enough of the youth team to say how many can you make a real lasting impression. What I've seen coming through, who occasionally getting games in the first team. I mean, I think Henderson is on the margins of being a long Celtic player, but I'm not quite convinced. I saw him in a lot last year in the pre-season games, and he looked a lot better then than he has done in the more recent games that I've seen. But we'll see, you know.
But my point would always be, one of the criticisms for people within Scottish football is we hoover up all the youth talent.
Well, we don't. Clearly.
No, but that would be my point. At 14, 15 and 16, we do. So what's the difference? Why would we go and sign an 18-year-old who looks a star at Dundee United when patently 2 years ago, Celtic felt there was a better guy because he's on our books than the 18-year-old? Well, the only difference would be the Dundee United guys played football for a year and a half, first team football.
Yeah.
So he's had proper development of his skills.
Yeah, but this again, it's an old argument, but it's easier if you're Dundee United aren't playing the Champions League, Dundee United aren't expect, you know. So I feel sorry for Celtic in that kind of way. We were kind of duty bound to win, but you know what I mean. There's more pressure on it's that thing. It's, you know, the Rangers aren't around, so there's a slightly less pressure. But you know, the worst one, if they ever come back into the Premier League, which doesn't look very hopeful for them right now. Anyway, you know, so it's hard. You know, again, it's that. But it's easy to blood young kids, and if you're Dundee United or whatever, but they seem to have hit on some kind of formula or production line or something.
But I do think it's largely getting them to play first team football. I mean, it's Feyenoord now. They were about to go bust, and so they could only play youngsters, and now their team's made up of them. And I always remember when people wanted us to sign McFadden many, you know, 10, 12 years ago, saying to people, is he any better than Sean Maloney? The difference to me between McFadden and Maloney right at that point was McFadden was playing first team football, Maloney wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, but would you be quite happy to see, you know, a dip in results for, you know, over a, you know, 6 to 8 months? Would you be happy with that?
No, and that's a dilemma, because the fans will criticise if we're not playing the youngsters and not bringing them through. Uh-huh. At the same time, the fans will criticise because we're not signing star players and playing them.
Yeah.
And at exactly the same time, if the manager then goes on a bit of a different run, so for example, 2 years ago, when Lennon did decide to only play the youngsters to make sure we got Champions League football, he was getting pelters for some of the domestic performances.
Well, there you go. Who'd be a member of the Celtic board? You know, we can't have it every way, can we?
No.
But, you know, what would you do? I mean, what would I do? I'm afraid, you know, you've got to have a winning, you know, you can't, the idea that, you know, that we wouldn't win the league this year. I mean, given our, you know, what it costs to run the club and all, we need Champions League football or European football in some kind of form. So you can't afford, if you're in charge of the club, you can't afford to run the risk. So you can't, of not getting, you know, at least, you know, your Reykjavik in the first round and then getting beat by, you're still in the Europa League, which, you don't forget, the Europa League would actually, I'm slightly terrified if we get through against Maribor. I mean, what, you know, we still haven't, you know, got ourselves organised. I mean, it could be a pretty horrendous.
It could be like last season.
could be worse than last season.
Well.
You know, it could be a real, you know, horror story. You know, and I wonder if the Europa League might not be a better theatre.
You say a horror story, but the thing I remember about last season was sending texts at 4-1 in the Barcelona game saying this could be 10 or 11 if Barca wants it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... I didn't watch that game. I turned
it
off.
You put it off, yeah.
No, well, as I say, I can't face up to failure. Not in my footballing life and not in my personal life.
Yeah, avoid negative people.
But yeah, I mean... So it's a tricky one, you know. I just feel, you know, when you look at a club like Dundee United, and it is, maybe it is just the fact that they're playing, but even, you know, they were playing last year, you know, before they went, they had that great run around November, December, where they were winning 4-0 or 5-0 every single week. Mm-hmm. When these kids hadn't been playing a lot of first-team football, it was only in like a few months. So my point is that they were already quality players. Now they're quality players, then plus... Now getting the experience of first team footballer, so
yeah. But then the other thing is a team sets out differently against Dundee United than they do against Celtic.
That's a point. You're right enough. No, you're right.
And there's more pressure walking onto Celtic Park than there is walking onto Tannadice. There's a whole load of factors, but there is an argument, and it's being increasingly spoken about in the Premiership. There is an argument that the top clubs do away with their academy system.
Isn't that amazing?
Because they're never bringing anybody through.
That's right. I mean, for the amount of money invested, you know, what's coming through.
Yeah, you know, if it costs us £3 million a year, £2 million a year to run in a football academy, well, we could go out and buy Dundee United's best player every year for £2 million.
Yeah. Do you know what? Don't get me going on the Premiership. You know, that's just... I mean, they're just the source of all evil in football. I'm sorry, you know. I was reading something the other day. I mean, it's not in the point. It's probably not for this podcast. You know, how the Premiership is essentially killing indigenous leagues in Africa, because what's happening is the African TV companies are paying so much money for Premiership TV rights, they have no money left to pay for the local leagues' TV rights. Does that sound familiar?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, it's exactly what's happening in Scotland.
Yeah, Scotland, yeah.
I mean, it's... anyway, sorry, I'm getting off the track there. But anyway, yeah, again, it's times like this, you know, and you get to talking about stuff like this, you just realise, God, it is hard running a football club. I mean, it's like 10-dimensional chess.
It is, and I also fully appreciate that the vast majority of any player that we sign comes to us to go to the Premiership.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of if that player thinks he's from the continent, thinks he's any good, he's coming to us to go to the Premiership because we don't sell players anywhere else.
Yeah. And that's presumed that when the player turns up, I mean, that's it has to be. I mean, that's the selling point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you come here, you know, look at the conveyor belt we've set up here. You know, you come here, you can go the same way as Forster and Wanyama and Ledley and Key. I mean, if you're coming from, say, Belgium or Holland, you're not going to step right into the Premiership. You're not quite at that level, son.
Yeah.
You come here, we've got a proven track record of developing players at your kind of level, and then we've got this fixed conveyor belt straight into the Premiership.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to see how can you break that if you're Celtic? How you know you can't. Are you going to lie to the player? Say, oh, we'll sell you onto the Premiership in 2 years' time, and then go turn around and go, no, we want to keep you for 5 or 6 years. You know,
yeah.
it's a tricky one. You know, but clubs have done it. I think it might have been you actually. It was a really good point. You know, so you buy a player, you develop him, you sell it on, you make a £5 million profit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the next player that you buy shouldn't be a £600,000 player. It should be £1 million player because you've made a profit from the previous player. And what you do is you develop, you know, you kind of develop your, while, you know, continuing the conveyor belt, you actually raise your club up, you know, to, you know, like Porto, you know, where you're a level where you can actually get to the quarterfinals of the Champions League and compete with a big team. Because, you know, you're making enough of a profit from the conveyor belt to actually buy better players.
Yeah.
What's happening with us, though, is that we are making bigger and bigger profits and buying worse players.
Well,
and buying players at all.
Yeah, because the problem is twofold. One, you sell the good players, and as I said in the piece the other day on the website, so that then the problem with that then is you retain the not so good players. So your point about the £600,000 player, that's part of the reason why you need to start moving up the ladder. Otherwise, we can. But the other thing is, because of the Premiership, football inflation is running at such a level that £1 million player today was last season's £750,000 player.
Oh, it's incredible.
If we stay financially at buying £2 million players, it means that 2 years' time, the £2 million player is the equivalent of the £1 million player today.
Yeah. The other thing is, well, we seem to have quite a bad record of £2 million players. We're quite good in the £1 million bracket. But something seems to go skew with when we get to two, you know, so people start getting a bit lightheaded.
Well, do you know, it's the other thing, and we seem to be okay at midfielders and defenders, but the strikers that we sign, the non-British strikers, have all been rubbish. So we spend £2 million on someone and he's rubbish, when we can pick up the same quality of player who's not good enough for the Champions League, but would do us a turn in the SPL for £1 million. There is an argument we'd be just as well going out and signing a £1 million player who can score goals in the SPL and not blowing £2 million, but actually buy £1, £4, or £5 million striker every 2 or 3 seasons.
Yeah, but even at that, you know, the kind of player that we want. I mean, look at Finn Boxen, at Hervin, the guy in Holland. He went to Sociedad for €8 million. I mean, that's completely out of our price range. I mean, I think everybody accepts that. I mean, just, you know, talking like this, it makes you know, hark back fondly to Gary Hooper. I mean, what a bit of business that was.
Well, I suppose what the argument with that then is, if it's so difficult to buy a striker, because everybody, you just need to look at Shane Long for £12 million to get an idea of how desperate people are for someone who can score goals.
Yeah.
One, we sold Hooper cheaply, but I think that's just the nature of where we are in non-Scottish football. But it also illustrates, if you get a guy who works and score goals, you should do whatever you need to hold on to him.
Yeah.
Now,
Hooper, from what I understand, Hooper would have quite happily have stayed for an extra, I mean, who knows, if it was for an extra £3,000 a week or something, you know, he couldn't have been that in love with staying. But from everything I hear, you know, he would quite happily have stayed if there'd been a bit more flexibility in the board, you know, over the negotiations and the wages. I mean, to dig out another Gary Hooper from somewhere, but it seems to be getting harder, doesn't it?
Yeah, because everybody wants, particularly the mix, and that more and more teams, whether they're playing a 4-2-3-1 like Ronnie Dyler or a 4-3-3 or whatever, principally there's one guy. It's not a two up front partnership for most teams now. So you're needing that one guy who's got pace, can hold the ball up and can score goals and be a poacher and a team player. Those are few and far between.
Well, there you go, and you know, he's gone to Real Sociedad for £8 million, you know, or he's Shane Long, who doesn't, you know, his scoring, you know, if Shane Long came to Celtic, people would be complaining about his goals to games ratio. Yeah. I mean, it's pathetic. But we seem to want, you know, the player that we all want is a £10 million player, and that's just not going to happen. It's you know, but we need to get somebody in quick, because I'm looking at that St. Johnstone game last night. You know, I know Stokes scored, but oh my God, he just does not look at the races. I have to say.
We've talked about the team and trying to do something different and what it looks like. Who are the players that you don't think fit with the way that you think Ronnie Dyler wants to play football?
Well, everybody who can't run 100 metres in under 14 seconds. Comments. No, I'm only joking. Yeah, but, you know, guys without pace. I mean, you know, guys who... Actually, before I got into that, you know, the one that I'm kind of slightly concerned is Johansson came. I thought, oh, he looks a good player. He played really well in his first few games. But recently I thought, hang on a minute, he's not really quite at the races here. He seems to be slightly lost. You know, I think part of the problem in recent games is, you know, been missing. You know, and I know you're, I'm not sure you're not a huge fan of Mulgrew, but when Mulgrew and Brown were playing as a two in front of the back four, I mean, no wonder the defence is terrible just now. I mean, there's no, they've got absolutely no protection. People are coming through them and nobody's stopping them.
Yeah, just to touch on something you said with Johansson there, the one thing I would say is I actually was watching the Reykjavik game, and under a new manager, you're looking at who would fit, who wouldn't fit. I remember watching the Reykjavik game and thinking that absolutely everything went through Johansson. I thought, this is a guy who he's one of the few people on the park who actually understands what the manager's wanting to achieve.
Well, maybe. Well, as I say, I just thought he was more impressive last year. But again, it's early days.
I think he'll benefit with Brown, as you say, with Brown coming back. I think him and Brown sitting together is what Dyler's looking for.
I mean, that's the end for Mulgrew then, isn't it? Not unless he plays in the centre-half. You know, maybe...
I can't see how Mulgrew fits into a game with pace.
He's not quick enough. Doesn't move the ball quick enough. Maybe he'll... You know, he's been... I really like Charlie Mulgrew, although I liked him a lot more when he was banging free kicks. And whatever happened to his... You know, he was a dead ball spec, you know, throwing in great corners and free kicks. I don't think he's scored since the cup final against Motherwell. I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I'm being critical, I'm not being overly. I just think he does a job. And where I was at the Reykjavik game, where I was in the Ledger game at Murrayfield, he was trying. You know, he was really trying. I mean, some of the Celtic players, I was a bit peed off with their body language. I think some of them chucked it. And he was trying. But I just felt his problem was, every time he tried to up the pace to play at the speed that he knows the manager wants to play at, he couldn't.
Yeah. So you would think Mulgrew will probably be on if they can get a buyer.
I think he might be turning towards a squad player. Aye.
Yeah, well, you know, and he's a very good backup centre-half.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a left-sided midfielder. You can't go wrong with that. He can also play left back. You know, you might be right. They might, but those are. I mean, you've got to think Stokes is on his way, isn't he? You've got to think Griffiths is on his way. You've got to think. I mean, Commons is a controversial one, isn't it? I mean, he's such a good player for us. Yeah. But although in saying that, the first goal at St Johnstone, what Commons did there was exactly what Dyle has been talking about. You know, you want to be pressing the other team's defence high, you know, high in their own half. You know, and he did that. I mean, that was a no-hope ball he was going for. And he actually, you know, he worked really hard, took the ball off the St Johnstone defender, and the goal followed. That was really good stuff. But generally, you know, spends too much time on the ball for the way that Dyler presumably wants to play. Maybe not quick enough. What is he, 30? You know, 31. His contract's coming up. Again, from everything you read, and why wouldn't he? He's asking to, you know, for a huge pay rise. You know, given his contribution, given what he did last year, there's no shame in asking for a substantial pay rise. But you just wonder, it's not the club's policy to be, you know, although I think Scott Brown's kind of slight exception. But there's not the club's policy to be paying 30-year-old guys big contracts. It just doesn't happen anymore, you know. So you just wonder if he might. Plus, you would think there'll be a market for a player like Chris Commons. He's such a good player, you know. It'd be a shame to see him go, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went.
I wouldn't be surprised. There was a bit in the St Johnstone game last night where a ball was played into him. And honestly, his control of the ball, he controlled it further than I can pass it.
Yeah, but come on. I mean, Chris, you're not really good. I mean, Chris Commons is a pretty skilled footballer, you know. You can't.
The point I'm making is there's a move, and there was a YouTube video that Celtic showed of Dyler and Collins taking the players for training, and it was all about how to.
You don't watch those videos, do you?
No, somebody.
You're so sad.
Somebody put a link up to YouTube, and it's one of the few that I actually looked at. But it was interesting because it was all about playing the ball up to the front men when they've got their back to goal and how to turn defenders. And the ball was played quickly to somebody's feet who played it straight back to the defender. Who, as he was playing it back, the guy was to turn and run into space. That was it. And every time we lost the ball away to Ledger, it was because we were trying that move that I'd seen on this YouTube video, except the player was passing it and the defender had already run away from where the ball was going to, so we gave the ball away. And that's what I've been looking at Commons doing. Every time he's tried to move the ball quickly in the games that I've been watching, since I watched this YouTube clip, every time he's tried to move it quickly, he's lost the ball.
Yeah, but that's, again, that's it's just not the kind of player. He's always been a player who gets it in, you know, takes a few touches, maybe tries and open something up. You know, it's just, you know, you're asking a guy to change it. If I said to you, you know, can you start writing in French tomorrow?
No.
You know, well, it's going to be hard.
Yes, it's going to be hard. At the same time, I also wouldn't be surprised if Commons had the intelligence to adapt his game and actually he's still there at the end of the season.
Well, that would be great, because I don't want to see him go. But, you know, again, you would think that the business mind and the board will kind of step in and say, well, hang on a second here. His contract's up at the end of the year. We're not going to pay him 35 grand a week or 30 grand a week. We might as well sell him now and get £1 million from him from Leicester and reinvest that money in this £5 million striker, the imaginary £5 million striker who scores 30 goals a year. Plays like Messi with the ball at his feet. You know,
he's signing on Saturday, that guy.
It's funny, you know. Yeah, I would like him to stay. I wouldn't mind Colin staying. Colin staying, but you just wonder if he might be gone soon enough.
So, any other players you've gone? I've mentioned Mulgrew. You've mentioned Stokes, and we've both touched on Commons. Who else do you think doesn't fit?
Well, I wonder if. Speaking of boys who don't move the ball on quickly, I wonder if Effie might be on his way. Although in saying that, it was a couple of weeks ago when Ronnie was talking about Tony. Well, I think it was in a veiled reference to Tony Watt, you know, saying that you know, the guys who are all back in the World Cup, you know, they're true professionals, and he reeled off Effie and Izzy, mm-hmm. you know, guys who are true professionals. So, but I mean, he's. Oh, you know, you wonder, this kid coming in from Man City, you just wonder if he's, and he seems intent on playing Matthews at right back.
Yep.
So if he plays Matthews, so you've got quite a surfeit of candidates for sharing the centre half spots with Van Dijk. You just wonder if Ambrose might be deemed surplus to requirements. I mean, there has been quite a bit of written in the papers that there is interest in him, you know, £3 or 4 million. But again, you would have to think, well, we've got, you know, we've got Mulgrew, we've got this guy from Man City, we've got Van Dijk, we've got Lustig. I mean, Van Dijk's going to be a Dutch international. Mulgrew's a Scottish international. There's a lot of international centre-halves have got there. So, you know, Effie might be deemed surplus to requirements, especially if they can get the kind of money that's been talked about for them. I'd like to see Griffiths go. I've never liked him. He's a decent enough player, but I've never liked him. The whole kind of Lee Griffiths thing just doesn't appeal to me. And I certainly don't like his, last season after what was the trouble he got into last year? Oh, the whole racism thing, alleged. And he scored at Kilmarnock. He scored at Kilmarnock and he had put his hands up to his ears in front of the Celtic fans. I just thought, Jesus God, what are you playing out there? You know, so... I just get him out. You know, he's more trouble than he's worth, really. Although in saying that, looking at him at the... I mean, he can pick a pass. You know, mm-hmm. he can move the ball quickly. I mean, he's a pretty good footballer.
I rate him better than Stokes.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, you know. But I thought it was significant he wasn't involved last night. St. Johnstone wasn't on the bench either. So you'd have to think there's something
he's
in that.
Yeah.
He's your tease out, Lee, I'm afraid. Again, you have to wonder... Who would take him?
Well, that's the problem, and it's a problem. I understand that from Peter Lawwell's perspective, the players that we don't want, who are earning Celtic wages, how do we get them out the door? The other side of the thing is, anybody who's listening to this podcast who's ever worked in sales, in the last 4 years when the economy's been gubbed, I'm sure they haven't been able to turn around to their manager when their sales have been crap and say, but you know what? It's just market conditions. I'm sure the managers turn around and say, boo hoo, sorry for you, there's the door, or you go and do your sales target.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And they're not earning £1 million.
Oh, well, there we go. Here we are. Man.
No, but my point being, that's his job, and he gets a very good salary for it. He gets four times the salary of a comparable CEO in a comparable turnover business would get. So that's his job, to get them out the door.
Don't be coy now. Who are you talking about?
Pierre Lowell.
Oh, Pierre Lowell.
That's his salary. That's his job's to get them out the door.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. You know, but again, do you want to get into this? I mean, I'm not in the business, the full-time business of defending people on £1 million salaries, much as I'd like one myself. But he didn't set his salary for a start, you know. And Peter Lowell didn't turn it, get up of his bed one morning and say, okay, I'm going to give myself £1 million a year. So you can't blame him for what he gets paid. You know, that's what the board need to pay him. So that's fine. And, you know, when he does, you know, you have to, you know, what is it, £61 million in, and, you know, £61 million in the last...
I'm sure when we go to the AGM, we'll have figures of £30 million profit or something like that.
Yeah. So to that extent, you could argue that he's doing his job properly. But, you know, if you can't sell a troublesome, infrequently scoring Lee Griffiths, I'm not going to fire him for not being able to punt Lee Griffiths for £3 million to some unsuspecting fool.
But actually, he's got a poor track record of shifting on the crap.
Aye, well, but again, it's in tricky circumstances, you know. You would think, though, that you take a player like Lee Griffiths, you read about it all the time in the kind of loan system, you know, a guy goes there, happens in America all the time in baseball. So there'll be some player will go from the San Francisco Giants to the Cincinnati Reds. And what will happen is the Cincinnati Reds will take the guy who's on 10 grand a week, but the San Francisco Giants, because they want rid of him, will pay $6.5 grand of the salary. Mm-hmm. So I don't see why, you know, if Celtic want to sell Lee Griffiths to Hibs, what would Lee Griffiths be on? $5 grand a week or something?
Maybe pushing 10.
No, come on.
I reckon he'll be 7 to 8.
Right. Well, whatever it is, you know, you could punt him to Hibs. Tell Hibs, well, we'll pay $6 grand of his salary. I mean, you know, it's probably sticking Peter Lawler's craw, but, you know, you take the $300 grand a year hit just to get him off the premises. You know, that would be worth it. Get him out of the way.
Interesting you say Hibs, because I have heard twice that Hibs have been in discussions about taking him on loan.
Taking him on loan, yeah.
Yeah, with us contributing to the salary.
Well, that would be it's hardly imaginative. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, brain surgery to work that out.
It would also be in our interest, because it would increase the likelihood that it's Hibs and Hearts who come up.
Well, absolutely. You know, I thought about that, you know, send Lee Griffiths to Hibs. You know, if he's paying on $8 grand, we pay six. You know, Lee Griffiths in the second tier of Scottish football, he'll be like Maradona or something.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll run rings around that, you know, and that might make life, you know, the added bonus of making life difficult for Rangers. Wouldn't that be fun?
More difficult. So, I mean, I've gone...
I've seen that's sufficiently Machiavellian for Peter Lowell to think about, I would think.
Well, I've already gone and put a bet on Hearts to win the championship. Because my friend, who's a big Rangers fan, for the last 2 years, the way he's described Rangers to me, I have never had any doubt that they will struggle to get out of the championship.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, who cares?
Yeah.
But getting back to Lee Griffiths, that would be a, you know, and there's a way, you know, can't we do that with other guys that we don't want? You know, just take the hit and you know, get them off the premises. And get guys that Ronnie, you know, get guys that the new manager wants in. You know, he keeps on going on about, you know, good footballers, he keeps on going on and on and on about, you know, true professionals. Mm-hmm. You know, there's quite a lot of those at Celtic, but, you know, wouldn't it be good if they were all, you know, like that, you know, weren't tweeting pictures of the new 800. Yeah. I mean, that was just... The night after you get beat, mm-hmm. I mean, really? I mean, how thick do you have to be to do something like that? I mean, it's not even... It's just ridiculous. And what an insult. You know, that kind of thing just sticks in the craw of everybody. So get them out, whatever it takes.
Anybody else?
I think... who else is there? I'm trying to think. No, I'd keep Izzy. Van Dijk won't be going, I don't think. I mean, again, the word on the street is that he's not going unless there's an extraordinary bid in. And the way he's been playing, you know, I don't think there'll be an extraordinary bid coming in. He's going to have to step up, you know, back to the intensity of, you know, his really great spell last year. I'm sure he'll do that, you know, because I don't think he's a stupid boy. So he'll be staying and going through the midfield to keep Scott Brown. I mean, I think more and more, you know, who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
But Brown seems to be absolutely integral to the whole, you know, the whole thing. You know, he brings that. We need a bit of bite, don't we?
Yeah. Well, St. Anthony on our side is not a fan. is not a fan of Scott Brown's, and I use the terminology, the American terminology of he's not the man. He's not our player of the year every year. But he's our most valuable. He's our MVP. He's our most valuable player.
Yeah, I mean, he's integral to the whole thing. You know, apart from anything else, to the, you know, the exact. Well, God, imagine holding Scott Brown as an example to people. The man who gets sent off in the Barcelona game. But you know what I mean in terms of, you know, from everything I hear. I mean, great trainer. You know, totally dedicated to the craft of being a footballer. He's never in the papers. You ever see anything about Scott Brown in the papers? Never. You know, and that's the way it should be. You know, he just does his job and goes home and keeps quiet. You know, and can't get him off the training ground. You know, he loves it. What more could you want from a professional footballer? I'm sure he's got a pair of 800 quid trainers, but I'm absolutely equally sure that he's not going to be displaying them to the world. And you know, so you know, he's not going anywhere. Hopefully, no. Well, he's not. You know,
no.
So. So that's about it. That's basically, I think that's about it. I mean, I don't know. Have you got any more that you could see out the door?
No. But I wouldn't be surprised to see all the, like, obviously need to see if Tony plays at the ability that had us interested in him in 12 months ago. But we seem to be interested in players, attacking players with pace.
So who's out? Borrector. Oh, he's good. He's right up. I mean, if he can get us together.
If he can be fit for more than a game.
Oh, isn't that just amazing? I'll never forget that. What was his first game? Was it Ross County?
Was it not St. Johnson?
Was it St. I can't remember. Was either, and he was an off after 33 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And he was sensational for the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then got injured. And that was it.
And that was it, yeah.
So for 6 weeks or 3 weeks or something. Can believe it. But you would think he'll get his chance. But we need I'm not saying anything new or original here, but we need a goal scorer. Yeah. We need a pivotal guy up front. You know, somebody who can gather the ball in, you know, feed it out, and then you know get back in position to score the goals. Mm-hmm. Where are we going to find one of them? Oh my goodness, it's going to be tricky.
Well, that's
the I don't know what about this guy at Dundee United, Sifchi. I mean, I haven't seen enough of him to know what kind of player he is. He doesn't seem to score a great deal of goals, does he?
No, I'm not sure about him. There was a couple of tweets tonight about a Ghanaian guy whose name escapes me, Wasako or something.
I saw that. See, I thought that was a goalkeeper.
He's a winger.
He's a winger. Well, we don't need, I mean, do we need another more wingers?
No.
No, we don't.
I do think it was interesting how much Dyla has talked up James Forrest.
Yeah.
In just 1.5 games.
Isn't that amazing? Well, he was mentioning him in the same breath last night as, although there was the same breath as Robin and Ribery.
Yeah.
But there was that slight undertone, you know, these people, you know, true professional, you have to look like professional. And I thought he looked terrific.
I think more or less Dyla seemed to be saying, there's no reason, Mr. James Forrest, there's no reason why you can't be like that.
Yeah.
The only reason is you yourself, that's the only reason you won't be like that.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, hopefully smart enough to, you know, if it was me, I mean, if I was a 22-year-old speedy winger for Celtic being compared to Aaron Robin, you know, I think I'd be smart enough to work out, well, hang on a second here. I can go one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can, I can be a great player, or I can just be going to drift into kind of that, mid-level nothingness.
But this is Jim Spence used the phrase when Dundee United sold Ryan Gault to Lisbon, Sporting Lisbon, is this the rise of the middle-class footballer?
Yeah.
And the big thing is, if you, and I'm not saying it's a middle-class thing, but if the guy's intelligent in the James Forrest position, and you think to yourself, I'm at Celtic and I'm Scottish, and he's telling me that I could be as good as that. So that means I can either be a legend at Celtic, or Celtic are a selling club, I could become a multi-millionaire many times over by being sold.
I mean, he's not in the same, don't say that, I'm not saying he's a Gareth Bale type character, of course he's not, right? I mean, Bale is a great, great player. But, you'd imagine if Forrest, trained on, he could go somewhere really good. Look at that kid Drexler at Schalke. Is he still at Schalke? Mm-hmm. No reason that, but Arsenal were talking about Drexler, for 10, 15, 20 million. They were thinking about buying I don't know if he's still at Schalke. Anyway, there's no reason why James Forrest couldn't be a player like that, talked in that kind of way. If he dedicates himself and trains on and, looks after his body and doesn't get, doesn't get his name in the papers.
Doesn't get done for his what he's been charged with in Prestwick.
Yeah, well, I always think when I read these things, what is a professional footballer doing in a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning? What are you doing?
Did you see? You may not. You probably wouldn't have seen it. There was a program just before the Commonwealth Games, and it was Chris Hoy.
Yeah.
Talking about what you need to win a gold medal.
Yeah.
And he went and spoke to other people. And the thing that really struck me was, first of all, speaking to people who'd won a gold medal, the morning after they won the gold medal, their first thought was, how can I be even better? Because see the guy who was a split second behind me, he's going to be trying twice as hard. And then the other thing was, it was Rebecca Adlington, who then says, so one of the things I decided was, I normally don't drink within X weeks of a competition, I decided I wouldn't drink for 12 months before the competition.
Can you imagine? I might manage 12 minutes. he could be he could be up there, mentioned in that, not quite at the very top level where you've got your... But, is Nani at Man United a better player than James Forrest? Is Raheem Sterling a better player than James Forrest? You have to wonder.
The thing that struck me, obviously, I love my sort of sporting books, and I've been reading a lot of people like Malcolm Gladwell and Matthew Saeed's Bounce, and books that principally reaffirm my perception, which is, yes, you might be born with some natural advantages in that you'll always be a better basketball player than me because you're taller than me, type of thing. But the principal reason you're successful at something is 10,000 hours of purposeful practice.
Yeah. The other thing is, because I do a bit of coaching and all that kind of stuff, kids stuff, and people always tell you, never praise talent, only ever praise hard work.
Yeah.
So there's a touch of that with Ronnie, isn't there?
Yes.
So,
I was watching that programme with Chris Hoy, and I thought to myself, he reaffirmed there is no reason why, we've talked about the Celtic youth system, there is no reason why a 16 or 17-year-old currently at Celtic cannot go on to become one of the best players in Europe. No reason.
Well, apart from, some people are more gifted than others. Come on,
Yeah, but that's what I was saying. The gist of most of the expertise is the gifted bit's marginal, the hard work's bit's the main bit.
Yeah.
So that's the point.
So going back to where we were when this podcast started about 5 hours ago, what was I going to say? Let's change the whole culture. It's a big quotes and quotes, a big ask. But if Dyla wants to change the whole kind of culture of the way football is approached in this country, in Scotland or at Celtic, then who wouldn't want to see that?
Yeah. So if we move off the football bit for a minute and then talk about Legia. Oh, it seems a lifetime ago, but a week ago, a week, 10 days ago, you hear that HMRC, a week ago, 10 days ago, you hear HMRC have decided to appeal the UTT. And you go on Twitter and there's Rangers fans going off their nut. And then you just start to get the first bits of rumours coming through.
Amazing how it came out.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was a fake, or somebody done up a fake website or something.
Uh-huh.
It was. I mean, I think Eddie had put it up on Celtic Underground. It was a retweet or something or other. I just thought, well, that's just nonsense. And you go to your bed, and the next morning, the whole thing's blown up.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing, isn't it?
It was also,
I'm kind of torn between embarrassment and. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, it also for those of us online, is an example of how incredibly quickly the world moves, mm-hmm. and how news that. So an example of that was, I spoke to a colleague of mine who doesn't really go online. He's a Dunfermline fan, and he gets his news from the newspaper. So I'm speaking to him, and he phones up, and I said, I take it you're phoning up to congratulate Celtic on getting Maribor in the Champions League.
Oh.
Well, he didn't even know that there was a chance. And it had gone through the whole process of, they fielded a player, there's going to be a hearing. The hearing happened, the result happened, and we got the draw. And to me, it felt like old news because I'd been reading about it non-stop.
Yeah.
And this was a guy who, the first he knew about it was when I told him on the telephone.
Well, the same when the appeal. I mean, there was a story in some Polish newspaper that had been tweeted out last night. It had been leaked, the result of the appeal that Lazio had been turned down. It was leaked to the Polish papers on the Tuesday night. Before the result didn't come out until I think it was 1 o'clock in Switzerland. So a full 18 hours before, it was already on the interwebs that the appeal had been knocked back. I try to make myself feel embarrassed about it, but I just can't. You know, I just think it's kind of funny, really. And the way, again, all comes back, the way it's run out on social media. It's been very, very funny. I mean, particularly kind of raging Rangers fans and all. I mean, it's been quite funny. I mean, and Liesia, talk about bad PR. You know, the way that they've tried to sort of turn it around.
Well,
all that, you know, let's have a dance off and all that kind of stuff. That was great stuff as well.
I mean, it just struck me. What gave me heart was how quickly they went down the let's have a dance off route.
Uh-huh.
Because it just made it obvious to me that they knew that they couldn't win, and they were just trying to embarrass Celtic into Celtic saying, you know what, don't let us win, please.
Well, I saw something today saying that, you know, if Celtic had turned down the, I don't know if it's true this, but if Celtic had turned down the chance to play Maribor, they would have been kicked out of the
Europa.
If
Celtic had refused to play, Celtic would have been suspended by...
Well, there you go then. So that's that. Anyway, so I just hope. Well, I have no idea what Maribor are like. I mean, I don't know if you've seen much of them. I don't think you're locked in your attic every night watching the Slovenian league on Sky Sports 56. who knows what they'll be like? Liesia, I'd just be interested. Or Liega, or whatever you want to call them. If they're actually a decent side. I mean, they might actually be a decent team. I've no idea.
What do you think the chances would be of at some point we drop into Europa League and we draw them? That'd be a disaster. I mean, the trouble would be...
Well, presumably we can't play any worse than that. So, and they will go in with a... Well, they'll be highly motivated, shall we say.
Do you think?
You think? We couldn't be any worse. And as I say, the way those games went... Well, the one in Murrayfield was just... awful. I mean, that was, we looked so flat that night. So I have no explanation for that. But the 4-1, I mean, everything that could have gone wrong for Celtic did go wrong. You know, we could have got out of that either 1-1 or 2, got beat 2-1. Playing the one in Edinburgh, that was just a strange game. But so hopefully we can get through them, because I don't, you know, I hope we don't get a real doing off Maribor. That would be pretty bad. I mean, the knives would really be for Ronnie Dyler then, I think.
Paul Brennan seems to think that certainly the team that played against... I've not spoken to him already, stuff about it since the St. Johnson game, but he's of the opinion we're not good enough to get past Maribor.
Oh, is that right?
Having said that,
I wouldn't be surprised, you know.
Maribor in the previous round got Maccabi Tel Aviv, and I think they won 1-0 at home and drew 2 each away. But bearing in mind, the 2 each away was taking place in Cyprus because there's no games taking place in Israel.
So, I mean, I don't know if the Israeli team are any good. Again, it's a kind of...
I was going to say, so bearing in mind that we have no point of reference as to how good the Israeli team are.
Well, weren't they trying to buy... There was a rumour that they were in for Kyle, and they probably looked at him and said, no thanks. Actually, here's another one. He might be on his way as well. Wouldn't you think he might be a slightly surplus to the requirement? I mean, you have to clear out players like that, because if you want to bring through younger guys like Liam Henderson, you know, he's probably a more forward-thinking player than Bernd Kayal, but, you know, it just frees up the that clogging in the midfield area to give the younger guys
That's where there is some validity in how you bring youngsters through, in that is Kayal, for example, so dramatically better than Henderson?
No.
That we wouldn't be better trying to get a couple of $100,000 for Kayal and play Henderson.
Yeah, there you go. I'd agree with you there.
And my mate always made the point about Chad Urie. Was there not a right back in the youth system who was, if he wasn't as good as Chad Urie, he wasn't dramatically worse than Chad Urie, that we couldn't have punted him? We needed to sign Chad Urie and not play the youngster.
Yeah, he was a great lad, though. I loved him. And then he went to Germany, and then he started slaughtering Celtic.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, he slaughtered Scottish football or something.
Sure he did. The thing I remember about him is his dad's name was Bum.
Anyway, what were we talking about? Getting back to the whole Champions League. Well, we'll see. I just hope that, of course I hope that we get through. But if we get beat, I hope it's it's not another horror show. Because as I say, you can already, hear it. The knives are out. There are people just waiting to jump on this guy. Totally unfairly, given the kind of what the plan is and what he's going to be trying to do. You're starting to say, you've got to change manager after 6 weeks or 8 weeks. I mean, it's just absurd, isn't it? But I don't doubt that will happen if it all goes horribly, horribly wrong at Maribor. And maybe another when's the game next week? Well, he's got another 5 days to get this sorted. And that'll be plenty of time.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how we perform on Saturday against Dundee United.
Well, I'm really, really looking forward to that game, actually. Really looking forward to that. It should be a good game because they won their first two games.
Yeah.
I also want to take a right good look at Armstrong. When I watched Dundee United, I always had my eye on Gold, was the one I really loved. He would be the one I'd really kind of look out for. So I never... you would kind of notice Armstrong passing, and there's a good ball. But I really want to have a look at him because he might be the kind of guy that we should get at Celtic Park.
So I'm just looking at how long they've been on. So we've got the Dundee United game. What's your prediction for the score, and what would your team be?
My team. Craig Gordon, didn't he play well against St Johnstone? He looked pretty good. His distribution was awful, but that can easily be sorted.
Well, that's also because he's been out for 2 years. Good going up for last minute corners.
Oh God, it's just a long running joke now. the team has got Gordon in goal. You've got Matthews, Lustig, Van Dijk, Izzy.
Right.
Midfield, Forrest. This is the tricky part, isn't it? Johansson. Well, Beaton looked very poor last night, actually.
Not as poor as he did the week before against Legia Warsaw.
Yeah, he looks like another guy that's slightly confused about what he's meant to be doing, because he looked a very good player last year.
Yeah.
When he had just a much more destructive role last year, didn't he? He was just a guy, you're going to sit in front of the back four, you're going to break things up, and you're going to pass a short ball out and let somebody else take care of business. He's now been asked to play far further up the field.
I think he's also a player who likes to take his time.
Aye, well. But he'll be playing Beaton, Johansson, left wing. I'm thinking he might give Bo Richter a game what are we playing? What system are we playing? We're playing
4-2-3-1.
All right, so we've got Beaton and Johansson in front of the back four. Three is Forrest, Commons, Bo Richter up front. That's a trick. You might stick Commons up front, actually. Yeah. Actually, I'll do that. I'll move Oh, it's tricky then, isn't it? I'm just trying to keep Anthony Stokes out of the team.
What about Pookie up front?
What about Pookie up front? Yeah. But then, where do you got? Presumably, he's looking for a spot for Tonev and Borek. Well, maybe not Borek. I think you fancy Borek to run. What's that?
And Berget.
Oh, my God. Right. You've now got me all confused now. I've got to pick three from five. Right. I've got Forrest is definitely playing. I think Commons will be the one in the middle of the three. Yeah. And I think either Tonev or Borek on the left. And up front, he will probably play Anthony Stokes.
And you've dropped McGregor.
I would think he would drop Berget.
No, you drop McGregor.
I forgot about McGregor. Well, it's right, here it is then. No, this is it. I'm playing McGregor on the right, I'm playing Commons in the middle, and I'm playing Forrest on the left.
Right.
I would play anybody but Anthony Stokes up front, but I suspect you'll play Anthony Stokes because Stokes has proved that he can score goals, can't he? And that's, you know, we don't have anybody that can do that right now. Yeah. So it'll be interesting, though, if he doesn't play Stokes up front, that will be a real... Because this is the first real big test in Scotland, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, that will be sending a message. You're not getting a game and you're on your way.
Yeah.
If he doesn't play him in this game.
And I
would play him. I would play Pookie, but, you know, that's because I'd like to get Anthony Stokes gone. You know. So, that's it. So, that was a bit shambolic. What's your 11? Quickly, go on.
Gordon, pretty much the same back four as you to speed things up. And then... Based on the players he's got available and what we've seen today, I go with your Johansson and Beaton. And then it's a three, although maybe it might be Johansson and Mulgrew, because Mulgrew was only suspended for one game.
Ah, right.
And then the three will be...
Actually got a lot of players to choose from.
Like you, I think he will place. Do you know what I think? I think he will play Stokes for the simple reason of I don't think he fancies Stokes, but he's got no other goal scorer except Griffiths, and he's obviously decided Griffiths is off. He's got no other goal scorer to put in, and I don't know if he would have the balls to play an attacking unit of four that comprised McGregor, Forrest, Berget, and Commons. So, i.e., not an out and out striker as one of the four.
It'll be interesting. And I would say I'm really looking forward to that game, you know, and I want to see how McNamara is doing at Dundee United because, you know, if it all goes wrong in October.
He's the reserve.
Actually, I was thinking that last night. It won't happen, but if it did, I mean, he's probably obviously the next one to go after. Wait. But he's probably smart enough to say, no thanks, I'm not going to take, you know, not that you know what I mean? He might be just a guy to say, no, I don't want to do that. I want to stay at Dundee United and I want to develop and I want to go and be the manager of PSV Eindhoven or something like that.
But I think we'll stick with Ronnie and I think Ronnie will be a success.
Well, there you go. And we'll all live happily ever after.
And we're going to win the Champions League in Warsaw.
Where is the final next year?
Either the Champions League or the Europa League's in Warsaw. Hold on a second.
No, the Champions League isn't in Warsaw. There's no way they'll have that in Warsaw. I mean, the UEFA boys won't want to go to Warsaw. Are you looking it up?
I'm looking it up as we speak so I can tell you and get it on the podcast. The 2015 Europa League final is in Warsaw.
Europa League finals in Warsaw,
Warsaw, yeah. So there you go. So
and the Champions League finals in Berlin.
Yeah, there you go. That's it.
Pick your poison, Berlin or Warsaw. We're all going to Berlin.
Yes. We're off to Berlin in the sun.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. That's been great. Thanks, Lawrence.
No bother. Thanks a lot, Harry.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Hopefully enjoyed that chat there with Lawrence. I'm sure we covered most things that he was Celtic since the day Neil Lennon walked out the door. As we both said in the podcast, we're really hopeful that Ronnie Dyle will be successful. Press are having a go, one bad result, disastrous result, and they were straight in there. I wonder why that is. Anyway, enough of me. In the background, Gary Bird and the GB Experience with a song out on 12 inches that justified being a 12-inch single. It wasn't just a 7-inch extended. So this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight. This is Gary Bird singing The Crown. Good night. Good night.
That's why I'm here and on the case, grabbing up every mind with a special degree in sociopsychology, PE. The Gary Bird Experience is my course. When you take my class, you will feel the force, cause I know the roots that the rap is from. When I speak to you, I am not dumb. Hear my rap and begin to dance, and I promise you this, you will advance. You may have seen the Raiders from the Lost Ark, but you still left the theater in the dark. So clap your hands to the beat as the wonder sound, and the GBE shine on the ground. I said, once upon a time in Alcaboo lived a kings and queens who looked like you. It was a land of sun with a golden shine, a place that once was yours and mine. Home of a many great dynasties who created science and astronomy, where the Romans came to study math and the Greeks found out about the path. In case you wonder what else they did, the Acaboolans created the pyramids, and before Napoleon could even blink in Acaboo there stood a giant sphinx. Some say they came from outer space, but they are a part of the human race. If you know the place where they can be found, you may be the one who can wear the crown.
Bye.
clan, the crown will appear in the GBE, but it's never seen on your TV. It's in a black and a white in your gold mine, a picture so old it defies time. Alex Haley drew it in his book, swat gun to captain his other foot. Ghana, Song, Pai, and Omali, they are the roots of your own family tree. Kingdom so vast and knowledge wise, they remove cataracts from human eyes. And yet today some refuse to see and live in fear of their discovery. Not in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean true, but years before in Alcabu, a ship set sail with a chocolate crew. 2,000 years before Columbo came, the Olmecs built tributes to their fame. Stone heads with faces 8 feet high that the Hulk could not lift to his thigh. Though the facts historians avoid, first to arrive was the Africord. It may shock the house and shock we do, and if you're not prepared, it may shock you. While some had doubts that the world was round, in America, guess who wore the crown? To smoke, to cough, to dust, or speed. With the crown you can become the high, and you will make it if you try. But don't you ever forget what it will take to wear the crown you cannot fake. If you're gonna lead, you got to be a king and give the world your everything. Or be a man like Malcolm X and demand for all the very best. Or conduct a railroad like Harriet. We all owe her a lifetime debt. If you're gonna fight, don't do it free. Make them pay to see, just like Ali. Or sing like Ella and make them guess, is it you or is it Memorex? If you play a sport, become number one, like Joe Louis and Robinson. Make Dr. J your shining star. Shoot like magic, dunk with Jabbar. Or if you can write, then write some books, like Langston Hughes or R. Miss Brooks. If you think you're smart, don't deceive us. Be an Imhotep, be a genius. And don't let anybody confuse the fact, you don't wear the crown just because you're black. Everybody in the world has a crown in place. If they